Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to preview this weekend's Qatar Grand Prix. And when I say we, I mean all three of us. I am joined by none other than Mr. Timo Alvers-Daly and Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
Good, thank you. How are you?
The cold is nearly gone. I've still got a bit of a ropey throat, a bit of a cough that comes and goes, but the congestion's gone, the crushing headaches have gone, the sort of intolerance to bright light has gone as well. So we're heading in the right direction.
I have heard that man flu can be almost deadly.
Almost deadly, as bad as childbirth. It is a great many things, and it is truly an abomination that I've had to deal with this, because frankly someone so excellent as me should not have to deal with something so trivial as having a cold. But hey, we move on. Timo, how are you?
You sound like you could do with some coach-built whiskey as produced by Mr. Jensen Button. Please sponsor us. We'd love to have some of that, and it would fix Jesse in the process. That's my pitch for today.
It would make you feel a hell of a lot better.
As for myself, I am in good stead, so I'm looking forward to Qatar. It's a sprint weekend, so I'm less looking forward to that. But we have Formula 2 and F1 Academy back, so that balances things out for me.
Excellent. In the meantime, then, we shall jump into the news ahead of this weekend. And we'll kick off with Formula 1 Academy, which is back after what feels like an incredibly long hiatus since we last saw it in Singapore. And we're back, and we've got a new wild card. We've got Alicia Palmowski, and competed in 2024's GB4 Championship. The 18-year-old clinched the vice champion honours with 3 wins, 2 pole positions and 11 podiums. Recently, she as well drove in the all-female Formula E test for Envision Racing. So she's a dab hand behind the wheel of a single-seater and could prove to be an interesting wild card in this weekend's action, especially we've seen a couple of the recent wild cards prove that you can actually go out and nab points with that one-shot seat.
Yeah, she's the kind of driver that makes sense to join F1 Academy in this capacity, with hopefully an eye to joining the grid full-time next season, because as I keep saying at the moment, we do need to fill those seats and we need new people to do that. Which seems to be on the right path, like you say. Very impressive GB4 season. Formula E test doesn't do too badly there. Not best finishing position, but at the same time, it's the first time in one of those cars, so you can't really complain too much. And with an eye to next season as well, some interesting news going off what I was saying in our Las Vegas review. Nina Gaiman has joined High Tech for the Formula Winter Series next year. That's been often used as a bit of a training ground for F1 Academy and W Series in the past to get a bit more seat time. We've seen Nerea Marti, Bianca Bustamante, to name just, and the Alcobasi sisters, I think, in there as well. Just to name a few people who have then gone on to then be in F1 Academy for that year. So fingers crossed, High Tech recruit her for next year.
I hope so, because she was great in F1 Academy. I would say, one of the best, if not the best.
Been the best one so far in terms of a guest wildcard, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But in terms of Alicia, going back to her, I mean, we also have to say this was her first year in GB4 as well that she came runner-up in. She also won the first race of the season, so she's no slouch. I think she's also one of 10 finalists in the BRDC Rising Star Award this year. And then back in 2020 as well, out of 60 drivers, she was the one to be awarded with the Janessa Junior Scholarship too, which, well, one shows incentives like these work, and through her own success and then gaining further publicity, she's been able to then forge a path for herself to gain more opportunities to work up the racing ladder. So that hopefully now means that, you know, opportunities like that mean that she can now have a seat in F1 Academy next year, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully this is going to open up a few more seats for them both. When it comes to talking about feeder series, though, we've got a new driver entering Formula 2. Of course, Formula 2 joins us at Qatar this weekend as well. And we've got a name that might not be hugely familiar to many of the feeder series sort of followers, unless you watch the smaller British series. And we've got John Bennett joining VAR for the final 2 rounds. He's replacing Enzo Fittipaldi. Bennett finished second this year in the GB3 Championship with 3 wins and 11 podiums. He's previously tested for the team in Formula 3. It's also worth reminding you that Dino Beganovic, Leonardo Fornaroli, Max Esterson and Kian Shields will also be making their Formula 2 debuts this weekend in Qatar. So an interesting sort of flurry of names appearing this weekend. Some of them more worthy of this step up than others, do you feel, Timo?
I'm not a fan of this particular one purely because he's skipping Formula 3, even if it is initially just for 2 rounds. There's obviously been no word on a confirmation for a seat next year in Formula 2, but he finished 22 points behind Louis Sharp this year, who will join Formula 3 next year with Road and Motorsport, which seems much more logical. So it seems curious that the champion would make the natural next step up, whereas the guy who finishes second gets to leapfrog him, even potentially for 2 rounds, but if he does well or doesn't do too badly, will be enough to then get him a seat full time next year while the champion is left in the lower of the two categories. It just doesn't seem to make too much sense there. In terms of him replacing Fittipaldi, though, at the team, that makes a little more sense in terms of them just replacing him with someone. It's Fittipaldi's third season of Formula 2 this year, and it's his worst season of the three. He's off been testing in IndyCar, I think. We were talking about that semi-recently, either on a podcast or off. It kind of all blurs together at this point. So he's maybe seen the writings on the wall. It's not going to happen. Maybe try and see what you can do over there instead. But in this one, the only trouble is Kushmaini, because he's the driver that buggered us completely last year when he stepped into Formula 2 after having finished absolutely nowhere in Formula 3 and then blitzed everyone's expectations by about 1,000%. So we're now stuck in this awkward position where we don't want to judge too soon, but we also still need to question because not everyone is going to be able to do what Kushmaini did. And it leaves us in this bit of an odd situation where we're even you and I, Jesse, are potentially left with more egg on our face than normal.
We'll wait and see what happens, but yeah, interesting name. And obviously, we've seen this year's champion from GB3 stepping up to F3, so we're seeing people jumping. But again, we've seen some interesting things when it comes to drivers jumping. Obviously, the archetype for that is Kimi Antonelli as well, who's made that sort of huge step up, and
Yes.
we have yet to see the full sort of fruits of those results to see what happens when you jump from something that is about F4 spec to something that, to F2, and then obviously straight up to F1. He hasn't had the best F2 calendar, but he's got 2 rounds left to rectify that, so we'll see what happens. More importantly, when we're looking ahead to future calendars and future years, Monza has been retained. Formula One announced this afternoon that it will continue to race at Monza until at least 2031, which I think is excellent news. It's always a good circuit. It's one of those ones that is laden with heritage and worth keeping on the calendar.
I don't see why they would ever get rid of it.
Quite, I agree there. I'm thinking it's a legacy circuit, like you kind of alluded to. Silverstone and Monaco are also in that ilk, so they should just be permanently on the calendar in the same way that I think Australia should be. And now you have this news, now retain Japan, Brazil, and Spa for another 20 years at least while you're at it, or just have them permanently attached to the calendar because they are Formula One. Formula One is them. Like you say, anyway, it would feel wrong for Monza not to be on the grid. Or on the calendar, rather, and the same for all the other ones. So it's whilst there's potentially a lot of chopping and changing and moving around, that's one of the tracks that should be left alone.
Anyway, moving on from Monza to a new thing that's been launched by Formula One, and it's their Diversity and Inclusion Charter. And the new formal charter has been agreed by all 10 F1 teams, Formula One, and the FIA, has been created with support from the Royal Academy of Engineering, which, alongside Sir Lewis Hamilton, delivered the original report for the Hamilton Commission in 2021. The charter is a result of recommendations from that report that the motorsport sector commits to improving diversity and inclusion across all organizations. The charter sets out an interesting vision, mission, and 4 key pillars of focus, which are the vision to enable anyone to access, contribute to, and enjoy global motorsport, the mission, which is to identify and remove barriers to attract and retain a rich diversity of people in our workplaces, improving our ways of working and engaging with stakeholders to drive innovation, and then the commitments, all the 4 pillars are. Attract, target and support initiatives that seek to attract underrepresented groups to motorsport. Retain, then we put in place process, or they will put in place process to mitigate bias in their organizations and create cultures of inclusion so a diversity of people can thrive in the sport. To create, they will listen to and encourage all perspectives in the design, development and delivery of our products and services, encouraging our supply chains to do this too and engage. They will communicate and our their commitment to DE&I with our external stakeholders, listening, learning, and improving to deliver a better, more inclusive experience. So it's a lot of interesting words. I think, again, much like we said with a few things from the FIA and Formula One, we'll believe it when we see it.
I think for me, the most important part of this charter is obviously the commitment to attract and retain. I think firstly, in retaining a diverse range of people within Formula One, it then becomes more accessible, which then sort of means it's more widely seen, and then that attracts more people from different walks of life and cultures into the sport. I think it's also worth mentioning that we follow motorsports, so we probably forget our own privilege in knowing what could be out there, and we probably don't even know all the roles out there, let alone someone that has no idea about sort of Formula One and what those roles entail. And I think whilst all the teams can agree to that commitment, I think a lot of it probably comes from when you're in school, and knowing what you can go on to do after you, well, firstly, then in your GCSEs and whatever the equivalent is around the world, your A levels, and then your degree in either uni or apprenticeships, things like that. And I remember when we did, I did an initiative with or helped out for the day with FIA Girls on Track. We had 100 young schoolgirls from sort of less and sort of underprivileged backgrounds, and they had no, like, not one girl put their hand up to know, had any understanding of what happened within Formula One. And that was kind of like the point of the why they were there, so that then they could learn about engineering roles and media roles. And but I think it starts at that real sort of grassroots level, just like how everything starts with karting. I think everything's also kind of, or majority of it will start there. So that's where I think this initiative or charter then really needs to capture.
Yeah, I think as well, it's like you say, you start off with everything you've just said there so that you can create more opportunities, level the playing field, but they need to be aware of all of these things in the first place so that they know it's out there and can apply for it accordingly. And then ultimately, I think that the aim of all of this is to help us get to a point where people don't accuse others of being diversity hires or something stupid like that. And it's obvious to everyone that they get where they are because they were the best person for the job, and that's essentially it and all. So it's kind of like that's very much that, but you need to go back, like you say, to the very start and go, this is available to you. You don't have to take it, but it's there at least. It'll make you aware of it and give you a deep dive into it so that you can at least make as informed a decision as possible about it. And I think, like you say, we three often really forget about these sorts of things in some ways because it's obvious to us, but we've always been around it in some way, shape, or form. So it seems a bit odd to us sometimes when someone new comes along or newer or more recent fan comes along and doesn't know about these sorts of things and these sort of opportunities are out there. And we go, well, how could you not know that? But then it's like, we do subscribe to this on a daily basis and we do pay a lot of attention to it to try and keep our eye out for it. Whereas if you're even just a casual fan or just a new fan who wants to try and see a way in and see, oh, I'd like to work in this area and go into say engineering or whatever, you're not necessarily going to know where to look for all of that. So it's trying to make that as obvious as possible so that you can get all of that there then.
Yeah, I think the grassroots aspect of this is going to be the most important when it comes to stirring up that new generation. I think it seems contrived or sort of closed-minded to say that the current generation is a bit set in their ways, but ultimately it's a not unfair statement to make, I feel. Whereas if you're able to drive up that new sort of wealth of diversity and people from different backgrounds with different ideas, aspects, and sort of influences, if you start that early as possible, you're going to be able to coach them into these jobs properly and give them the opportunities and the knowledge that these jobs and opportunities exist and give them those opportunities and chances earlier is going to give them a better chance of sort of accruing the skills, the details they need to know. As anyone knows, trying to get into sort of a new line of work late in your 30s or 40s, it's a far trickier thing to do than if it's something you set out to do from a young age and acquire those skills early on, in much the same way that we sort of say you don't simply just become an F1 driver when you turn 21. You spent the past sort of 21 years becoming an F1 driver. It's a long, gradual process. And to get into a sport that is as highly sort of highly strung and highly selective as Formula One or indeed motorsport is something you do have to start early.
It's nice to see them doing on the flip side of it as well, because like Ellie Mae was saying, with racing, you would start with karting, that's the obvious place to go, but that's not always been obvious for women coming into motorsport because it's not been as obvious, or it's the path been not clear, or there's been other barriers and whatever, and we can go into that and the whole other conversation. But you've seen, particularly over the last year or two, F1 Academy have been doing a lot of these karting sessions around the world to try and attract as many young girls as possible to do that grassroots approach to it. So it's nice that now that they've kind of got that off the ground, they're not forgetting about the other side of it as well. And like you say, then it all feeds into it, because as much as everyone might want to be a racing driver, we've seen with Megan Gilkes, the kind of pathway of racing is good, but oh, I actually quite like the engineering side of it. What's the pathway there? That may not have been so clear and easy, but straightforward to do 20 years ago if she'd been in that position. So the fact that she'd been able to transition over there is good. But if you want to start out doing that, that's not necessarily going to be easy, and you don't have to become a racing driver just so that you can then become an engineer or a data analyst or whatever later on. It's nice that that's being taken care of in the same way that the karting's being taken care of.
Moving on to something a little more frivolous, and Valtteri Bottas has announced that he is joining the Race of Champions in 2025. Obviously, famous for winning the Masters of Formula 3 back in 2009, as well as a bunch of other things when it comes to motor racing. Quite good at Formula 1, as far as we're aware. He'll get to race in
A
front of his
champion, man.
adopted home crowd down under. And doing so, he will join a class of drivers that includes Sebastian Vettel. Obviously, we know him as a four-time Formula 1 world champion, and he'll be competing for Germany. Sebastian Loeb, the French driver, and nine-time World Rally Champion Jamie Whincup, the seven-time Supercar Champion from Down Under, Travis Pastrana, 11-time X Game Gold Medalist. He's competing for America. Molly Taylor, the Australian, who will no doubt be teaming up with Jamie Whincup. We know her as the Extreme E Champion from 2021. Johan Kristoffersen, the Swedish driver, and also seven-time FIA World Rallycross Champion. And Mick Schumacher, German, who will be F2 and F3 Champion and Mercedes Formula One Reserve Driver still. And Hayden Paddon, a Kiwi, who is a two-time European Rally Champion. So a relatively stacked lineup and a lot of rally drivers on there. So I think there'll be some favorites when it comes to the dirt sections, and we'll see who does well when it comes to the tarmac courses. But should be a fun little event, really.
I'm hoping this is why Travis is going back for another bite of the apple this time, because snow was not his friend last year, and Nitrocross, X Games America, not a lot of snow competing there, but there is a lot of dirt and a lot of tarmac. That's literally how he designs most of his tracks, so I'm quietly confident for him, and that's probably me eating my words well in advance there. I know we've got people from the countries I'm about to list already there, but I'd love to see in the future Ricardo. I'd love to see Marta Garcia there, David Coulthard, Mark Webber, and Nasser Al-Attiyah would be good fun as well. I don't know if you two have any particular names that you'd want to join Race Champions at some point in the future.
I'd like Bottas and
I thought I'd
Kimi
limit myself
Raikkonen.
at five.
Mean, Bottas
KTM Rosberg would
competed
be
with
fun.
Mika Häkkinen previously, so I think we'd be more likely to see Mika Häkkinen returning than Rosberg putting the race suit back on.
Two people that just look the same. Are the same person. Have you ever seen them in a room together?
No. What?
There is a conspiracy theory that I'd like to hear more about, though.
I haven't
Is
even seen Keke
Bottas
Rosberg in
younger than
years.
Nico Rosberg?
Possibly. How old is Nico Rosberg? Nico Rosberg is 39, and
Yes, he is.
Valtteri Bottas is 35. So there's the answer to the question you were going to ask. Bottas is 4 years younger than Nico, so no, that simply could never have happened if that's
That's
what
a
you're
hell of a
suggesting.
trip.
She's making some leaps of assumptions that are frankly unfounded. Anyway, that's Race of Champions. It's happening next year. Looks like it'll be an absolute laugh, and it is, of course, happening down under. What we need to turn our attention to, though, is the action that is happening this weekend. We're heading back to Qatar. It's a sprint weekend. We've got Formula 2, we've got Formula 1 Academy. It's looking like a good little weekend, and again, the Qatar track always throws out some interesting curveballs.
And intriguingly, Toto Wolff has come out and said he expects Mercedes to do decently or not too badly in Qatar, which goes against everything that we thought was going to be the case. So now I don't know what to think.
It's given that they didn't really know how they achieved what they achieved in Las Vegas. Maybe they should have just probably kept it that way and sort of gone in with blind hope as opposed to sort of knowing what's going on.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many times have they gone into a race weekend and thought they'd be terrible and been really good at it and then thought they were going to go into it good and haven't quite been where they
I think
want to
they
be?
should adopt that as their constant strategy because whenever they don't think they're going to do well, they do pretty well. And if they just adopted that mentality all season long, they'd be champions again.
They've just got to think the worst and the best. It's like the opposite of manifestation, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of counter manifestation. Either way, we'll see if that comes good for them. We'll speak quickly on Formula One Academy. How do we think that's going to go down in Qatar?
I'm intrigued, as always, with F1 Academy goes to a new circuit and how early on in the day it's going to be in comparison to F1, because obviously that's for the Grand Prix going to be a night event. For the sprint, they've got a bit earlier in the day. F1 Academy, it's going to be hot, it's going to be humid, and even with the underpowered machinery that they've got, it's going to still be a big old test for them. So, potential opportunity to really impress if you're further down the grid because you don't know how good the top drivers are going to be. I mean, we saw last year in F1 and the and in 2021 in particular that you can be a very experienced driver and that's not necessarily going to help you too much, but at the same time, there's going to be a great opportunity for drivers. I mean, look at Gasly, I think. What was it last year? In qualifying or in 21, managing to propel himself up there, and you go, I don't know how you managed that, but it was just kind of taking advantage of the conditions and somehow being able to play it to his advantage. So I think there's an opportunity for that for the F1 Academy drivers. And when you're one of those drivers a bit further down the back of the pack, that's going to be quite good and maybe cautiously optimistic for the Alcor Basie sisters because they should have gone around here a couple of times before, in theory. It's their neck of the woods.
It's a very dusty and sandy circuit. It suffers a lot from sand being blown onto it. And equally, it's set to rain there on Thursday. So it's also going to be a very green circuit. There's going to be no buildup of rubber from when MotoGP last raced there. It's going to be completely clean. And it's not set to be as hot as it was when we were previously there. We obviously saw drivers suffering health-wise in the heat last time, this time around Friday around 23 degrees, Saturday 24 and Sunday 24 as well, with a bit of a breeze going through, taking a bit of that heat out. And again, we're racing a bit later in the day each time, so it's not too strenuous. You've had hotter days in both Australia and about UK and America for racing, so this is a bit more within the comfort zone of all the drivers, teams and preparers. But even then, it's a big, powerful circuit. It's got some long straights. I reckon we're going to see those F1 Academy cars topped out on the limiter unless they've got different gear ratios for top gear. Otherwise, it's going to be a very dull race, I fear. I don't think we're going to see a great deal. It's all going to be done in the braking zones, and they aren't great
You
cars for
need to be
trying to send
close
in the
enough.
brakes. Yeah, there's you're going to be relying a lot on the toe, and those cars are not great when it comes to the aerodynamics of getting a slipstream. So could be an interesting weekend for F1 Academy and not for the best reasons. Meanwhile, in Formula 2, more high-powered machinery, a bit more aerodynamically refined. I reckon we're going to see some absolute spice, especially as we've got, as we've already mentioned, a wealth of newcomers to the grid. They're going to be coming to terms with these high-power cars on a very low traction circuit.
I think we're going to see a lot of DNFs in Formula 2 this weekend in both races. Combination, like you say, through rookies being thrown into the deep end and just the conditions. While, yes, it may be cooler, it's still Qatar at the end of the day. It's not balmy. It's going to be strenuous, and they're going to be doing it earlier in the day when it's still going to be quite warm. So I'm expecting that the carnage we were expecting from Baku and didn't get to manifest itself here instead.
Will it be more the warmth or the humidity that gets them?
Probably the humidity. Humidity is looking around high 50s. So it's going to feel close. But again, there is a sort of roughly 15, 60 mile an hour wind that's looking pretty consistent throughout the weekend. So again, there's going to be sand blowing through. It's going to keep the air moving. But yeah, we're seeing highs of 24 degrees. Not like it's going to be 24 degrees into the night. Temperature seems to tumble away pretty rapidly, actually, if anything. So yeah, stable, easy to deal with. but it's still going to be warm. I'd say we've definitely had warmer British Grand Prix before. We've had British Grand Prix well into the 30s, so 23, 24 isn't going to be overly challenging for the drivers this weekend, I don't think.
Did you say 60 or 16 miles per hour wind?
16,
Was gonna
1 6.
say.
A 60 mile an hour wind would be
I
a
was gonna
I'm
say.
glad you
clarified for that because I was questioning that as well for a moment there. I thought,
I was like,
that's interesting.
that's a yellow weather warning here.
I know my voice
You're
is a
not gonna
bit
be worried
ropey at the
about
moment.
sand going off the track at that point. You've got plenty of other
No.
fish to fry on that one.
I mean, we'll be complaining because all the cars will be black because all of their paint will have been stripped off of them by the 60 mile an hour sand blast that hits them.
No,
But
you won't be
anyway.
complaining about that because you'll just see them go right through the air. Oh, he's off.
In theory, the cars develop enough downforce that you can simply nose them into the wind and they'll stick
Don't
down to the
ruin it
track.
with physics.
Anyway, it
Let
takes
me
more than
have my
60
comedic
mile an hour
moment.
breezes to knock over a Formula One car. Anyway, we'll move on to our predictions and we'll start with pole position. Timo, you've gone relatively route one with this one.
Yes, because I've had to be boring because you brought physics into it. Oscar Piastri, that's why he was strong here last year and he could do with another great weekend to pop off this year.
Solid. Ellie May, who are you going for pole position?
Carlos.
Straightforward. There we go. I, meanwhile, I'm going a bit mad. I'm going to go for Pierre Gasly. When it comes to the podium, Timo, you've also gone relatively mainline.
Verstappen P1, Piastri P2, and Leclerc P3. Victory lap for Max and keeping the constructor spicy for P2 and P3.
Nice stuff. We like to see it. Ellie
And it's
May.
his turn to get a podium, Ellie May. So that's why I didn't go for Carlos.
Ellie May, your podium then.
Carlos is winning it,
Solid.
followed by a Charles Leclerc second and an Oscar Piastri third. Because then that keeps things really spicy going into Abu Dhabi as to who will come second in the Drivers' Championship and who will win the Constructors.
I would love Leclerc to take it from Norris. Clearly.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting. I meanwhile have gone completely bonkers. I've gone for a Nico Hülkenberg win, Yuki Tsunoda second, Lewis Hamilton third. It's Qatar. We might see something interesting. I don't
I don't think it'll be that interesting. It's
know. I will get
not
some
to say it
help.
won't be interesting, I just don't think that interesting.
If it is that interesting, I will personally bake you a humble pie. Fastest lap, Timo, you've gone again pretty route one.
Yeah, Verstappen, he had the last 2 times we've been here, so it makes sense.
Ellie May.
No least.
And I've gone for Kevin Magnus, and I reckon Haas are going to pull something interesting out of the bag this weekend. Clearly, wild predictions, Timo.
I'm looking forward to yours here. You're going to have to really have to do yourself. I meanwhile, I've gone for double points finish for Williams because they need it and we need it. Everyone needs it.
Yeah, it'll close them up to the back of that scrapping pack for P6 in the constructors. Ellie May, your wild prediction?
Perez gets a podium.
That is a wild prediction, to be
That is a
fair.
wild prediction. Yeah, we haven't seen the Mercs since the start of the year. Meanwhile, I think Stake are going to score points in both events across the weekend. So that's in the sprint and in the Grand Prix. The sprint is going to be even trickier because it's shorter and you've
Can
got
you
it in the
imagine
top
them
eight.
getting P6 in the standings after all this? They somehow pull that out of the bag.
What a season it would be.
Oh. Netflix will lose their shit.
Oh, yeah, there'll be episodes that don't get aired because they've had to quickly go back and cobble together one for stake. Anyway, that's all we've got time.
Physically high can they get up? Say they both, say
Well,
they
that's
won.
what.
One and came second in both the sprint and the race. What points would th how high would they end up in the constructors?
What, across both this weekend and next weekend? So the best possible
Oh,
outcome
would
stake
you?
could enjoy.
Ooh. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2.
So that'd be
So it's what,
25 plus
50
25 plus
immediately
2 for the
for
fastest laps
the
plus what is it, 10 for the sprint
sprint
plus
and then
it'd
2 second
be
places?
2 second places would be 18 and 18 plus what second
Eight
place
and
is a
eight, is
sprint?
it?
8. Yeah, there's only one sprint though to deal with. So
Oh, yeah.
that would give them a total of 106 points.
What are Aston Martin on? That would be funny.
106 points would, assuming no one else scored points in that time, put them it would put them fifth.
I'll take it from Aston Martin.
Yes, yeah, Aston Martin are on 86, so it's actually relatively reasonable that across the next two races they could, if they really tried, take it from
That would
Aston
be
Martin.
hilarious.
Hilarious. If they really, they've been saving it all up for these two races to absolutely floor it.
Yeah, they have the perfect
Oh.
setups for Abu Dhabi and Qatar, the only two races they prepared for. Their final round of development packages come out and they go, "We got this, fellas, we got this."
That would be exceptional.
Yeah, it would be unequivocal because, yeah, just be chef's kiss, perfection. And you'd be relying on Lance Stroll to help Aston Martin cling on to fifth in the constructors against Valtteri Bottas and Zhou Guanyu
I
Yu.
thought, I thought you were going to say you were relying on Lance Stroll to score points. I'm like, well, that's a pretty safe bet then, surely.
No. Aston Martin, if they wanted to cling on to fifth in this scenario, would be relying on
Oh
Lance Stroll to score
no, I
points,
thought
which
you were
is
going a different way with that. That's why I
no.
was
My
going like, oh no.
occasional Lance Stroll skepticism remains unswerved, though my skepticism about stake scoring points does not. Regardless, that is all we've got time for on this week's episode, and my voice is just about running out. In the meantime, if you want any more from any of us, Timo, where can you be found?
T.Elwes.David.Dollar Curbs on Instagram gives you links to everything and anything and everything I do, really. Is it fast? IndyCar podcast, Nitrocross podcast, more of this podcast if you really want, some of my other podcasts, a bit of everything, really.
Not a
It's a
lot of
place to be.
podcasts.
I do. I don't know how this has happened.
Likes the
I
sound
don't
of his own voice.
know. One of us was going to say it. Ellie
You'd
May.
think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Ellie May, where can the people find you? If you want to be found at all, or would you
Yeah,
rather
you
just
won't.
find, yeah.
No, you
Don't
won't.
find her.
No.
Find her Just Giving page. Give her money for her cats. Yeah. Do
Yeah,
that.
please. Either that or open up your nearest Where's Wally book and see if you can find her in there. There's about equal chance of it happening.
Seems like you're actually just
Should we
calling her
start? We should
Polly.
start. No. Why are you giving me the finger
And if you
for?
want
That's
any
a great
more,
way to do a book series for you. We can do, where's Eddie May? We can. That's how we fund you.
I don't think.
it'd be
I don't
really
care
easy.
for Eddie May. We just hide
Looking
her in
enough.
books.
No,
I don't think we.
it'd be really fun to do actually, because you could have like that animated cartoon style of like a racetrack. There's a race going on, and you sort of go,
That's like
"Where is she?
24 different
Is she over in
pages.
the
Oh, yeah.
pits? Is she talking to Alex Brundle? No, he's ignoring her. Where is she?" And you just sort of find your way around that way. It'd be great. Where is she?
I don't think I'm unique looking enough for it to work. I think I'll just blend in with every other basic white girl there is. So
You say this like Wally is someone who stands out because of himself. He's literally just wearing a jumper and a hat.
and a rucksack and glasses and a walking stick. Like he is, the overall outfit of Where's Waldo is unique and striking.
Well,
No one
then
else.
Eddie May just has to put on a striking outfit. There you go.
There, if you want to find Ellie May, look for the woman wearing a striking outfit being ignored by Alex Brundle. And in the meantime, if you want any more from me, you can find me, of course, on social media as at Jesse on Cars. And you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly and on the Classic Car Weekly podcast. Much like Timo, I am now also a multi-podcaster. And of course, thank you to all of our listeners across the world.
I'm glad I
Most of
inspire you.
you do. You inspire me every week to do more podcasts. Thank you, of course, to all of our listeners across the globe, but of course, a special thank you to those of you who listened to us in New Delhi. This was the closest place I could find on the map to Qatar. So that was my only option. I was sort of tossing it up between New Delhi and I think Nairobi in Kenya was sort of the two that I vaguely measured out, and I was like, I think New Delhi wins it. However, New Delhi does have its own brewery, or very nearby to New Delhi, the White Rhino Brewing Company. They make a lovely IPA. So a couple of cases of that would be ace. Thank you very much. Or, as we mentioned at the top of the show, if Jensen Button wouldn't mind sending us some of his lovely whiskey, that would also go down a treat. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. Remember to watch all of the racing action this weekend in Qatar, F1 Academy, F2, and Formula One with the sprint. And of course, we will see you again with a review of all of that action in a few short days.